everything. I think I hit a president. The Pied Piper of the TV screen. It's gonna make it simple. And he's got it all mapped out and illustrated with cartoons. Too hard for clever folks to understand. Yeah, them are used to words like ideology, but they say it's not the issue.
Ideology.
They're not talking about right or left. They're talking about.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned with Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
Oh, if only I could tell fortunes. I'd be in much better shape than I'm in right now. Welcome to a Friday. We have made it to a Friday. Ah, it's amazing each week. It's like when we make it through the week. That's good news. And Donald Trump has gotten on a plane and he's out of here. It doesn't mean that the news onslaught will stop. I have a feeling next week is going to be just as busy as this week, only different. Well, today being Friday, I thought it was time for a health check, not only of our own health and the health of the nation, but the health of our computers. Because, you know, big story this week and for part of last week, too, was this WannaCry computer virus. And what I've learned is it's not a virus at all. No, there was something with the WannaCry ransomware attack that hit computers in numerous countries around the globe, asking for $300 in Bitcoin payment if you want your data back. My goodness, how times have changed, huh? So here's what we're going to do. A little later on in the hour, we're going to speak with Wendell Potter. If you've been around these parts for any amount of time, you know Wendell Potter. He was the health insurance industry whistleblower who left his job at Cigna because he just couldn't do it any longer, and really blew the whistle on what the health insurers were doing to us. He wrote and was keeping many of us sane during the Obamacare fight, and it was a long process that brought the Affordable Care Act into being. These days, well, he's got a new project he's working on. He'll tell us all about it in the next half hour, in the second half hour of the show today. But for the first part of the show, I'm going to reach out to someone who was with us a while back. He's known as an ethical hacker. In fact, you know what? Let's not wait any longer. Let's get Ralph Echemendia on the line, shall we? Joining us now on the line is Ralph Echemendia. He is known as the ethical hacker. Hey, Ralph, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Nicole?
I'm doing all right. We spoke, I don't know, it was a couple of years ago already. I think there was some big hacking occurrence in the world, and I was introduced to you. Can you explain to the listeners where the moniker, the ethical hacker, came from?
Yes. Well, basically, I got started in this whole hacking arena quite young, at 14, and pre-internet. And then as the security or cybersecurity industry became an industry, I actually was one of the first involved in writing a class on how to hack, on how hacking was performed, or what we call security testing. And so around that time is where this term of ethical hacking came up, and hence people calling me that.
Because you work with companies and individuals on how to protect their own, whether it's their own computer or their own network, on against attacks, yes?
Correct. Yeah, so basically it's, you know, I guess the quote-unquote ethical part, because it is a bit of an oxymoron term, is really that I'm doing it for the individuals and our companies that are paying me to do it against them. So it's not like you can't hire me to go hack your girlfriend.
Right.
You get my drift. That would be unethical.
I agree. Now, you're based down here in Miami, but you're somewhere on the other side of the world now, aren't you?
I am. I'm actually currently in Riga, Latvia.
Where is that?
One of the Baltic states.
Ah.
It's up near, you know, sort of the Norway, you know, up there.
Nice.
Lithuania, Latvia and Estonia are the three states that sort of are on the Baltic Sea.
I see. Well, I hope you're there having a little bit of fun. You're sure you're probably working too, but
both.
Good. Well, the reason we're talking today is the world has been hit by this attack. It's it's a ransomware attack. It's known as WannaCry. I guess that's kind of self-explanatory, because if I got hit by this thing, I'd want to cry. Can you explain what it is and who they're hitting?
Well, this specific one was targeting mostly organizations and companies. And the way that it did that, basically ended up using one of the NSA exploits that were released recently, which did in fact have a patch from Microsoft, which just goes to show that here we are in 2017, and still most organizations are not patching their systems correctly. So it affected, as you may have heard in the news, it affected multiple countries and industries, all over, and basically it encrypts the data and does not let the user and or company access their data unless they pay.
This is amazing. Now, you mentioned there's a patch. Did I hear read correctly that this hit Windows that were running XP?
Yes, it did. It goes all the way back to XP versions of Windows.
So, oh, but it hit the newer ones. It wasn't, because I thought it was only XP, and I was wondering why these major organizations were still running XP. Okay.
No. This affected many versions of Windows, but yes, to your surprise, and in reality, there are still companies running XP.
That's amazing, and especially when you see the scope of the organizations that were hit in Great Britain, the NHS. Really, the National Health Service was hit by this. And what happens is they somehow get access to your machine, it encrypts your data, and then they hold it for ransom, thus the name ransomware, and they're asking for Bitcoin. Now, what happens with, I'm guessing most organizations don't trade in Bitcoin. What happens if somebody wants to pay them off just to, get access to their data again, and they don't know the first thing about Bitcoin?
They will not be able to. They would only accept payment in Bitcoin.
So I guess you need to get a quick education in Bitcoin. Is there any reason that I or anyone else should be, getting Bitcoin, should know anything about it?
Yes, absolutely. Digital currency is a very interesting world. It is something that, of course, isn't regulated by banks and or countries. So there's no government regulation over digital currency, nor is there what we understand there to be as a bank. There are sort of gateways and companies that do exchange, just like the stock market, but is, like I said, it's not regulated by countries. And so, of course, many organizations are unhappy about that, especially those involved in finance, because of taxes and things along those lines. But it is a very lucrative world. That of Bitcoin and many other digital currencies.
Right, so there are others. I mean, I've heard of Bitcoin. Now, if I wanted to get some Bitcoin, say I want to start trading on the dark web, it's another term I want to ask you about, and I wanted to get Bitcoin, how would I go about doing that?
We basically do use actual money to turn into Bitcoin, if you will. So, you'd have to purchase Bitcoin with real money, whether that be using, a credit card or some sort of method of payment. From the non-digital world, but then once it's turned into Bitcoin, then you're now in that digital world of funding something.
Right,
that's how you get to paying for something in the dark web, as you mentioned.
And the reason they use Bitcoin is it's non-traceable. There are no records kept. You're not going through the traditional banking. I'm wondering, and this just occurred to me, here, obviously, in the U.S., there's an issue with marijuana, especially in states where it's legal, even for recreational purposes. Everything is done in cash because there's still federal laws against marijuana. So the banking industry is, I guess, reticent to get involved with the marijuana industry. So it's a cash business. Is that some kind of world where Bitcoin might eventually come into play?
Well, Bitcoin is already playing in the world of marijuana,
really?
As well as many other illegal and illicit drugs. So that's already been going on for many years now as far as Bitcoin being used for payment. However, the more of the business you're talking about, like California, and Colorado and places like that, it really is kind of ridiculous, to be honest, this whole cash situation. Like, I'm aware of a dispensary grower where he has, they might be going $100,000-$200,000 a day in cash, and they pay their taxes in Los Angeles, for example, but they have to go and make 4 or 5 runs because in that county, they're only allowed to make a payment of $4,999 at a time. So they have to pay $20,000 in taxes, and they want to pay their $20,000 in taxes, but they're not allowed to have a bank account. So in a way, these kind of issues are pushing more and more, whether it be legal or illegal industries, into Bitcoin or other digital currencies.
So would I be able to just say, Google, I want to buy Bitcoin, and it would come up with a way somewhere to get it? Or do I have to then go onto the dark web in order to get that?
No. You literally could Google that, and it would give you instructions and all of different exchanges you can buy Bitcoin from.
Okay, so now we're speaking with Ralph Echimendia. He is the ethical hacker who helps people protect their systems against hackers, against things like this WannaCry attack that's out there now. I did mention the dark web, and that's something that I find intriguing. More and more we're hearing about it, and it is the dark web because it's harder to trace or it's untraceable. It's sort of like the World Wide Web as we know it, except there's no paper trail or digital trail. What's the difference?
Yeah, well, basically, one of the ways that it's been sort of explained is sort of an iceberg. And, we understand to be the Internet is the part of the iceberg we see. And that we call the deep web or dark net is everything below. And so we can't really see what's down there. And it could be very expansive. But there is no Googling it. It doesn't quite work that way. There's no index for the way that these hosts or servers are in what you call the deep web. And again, that's just terminology you'll hear dark net or deep web, and technically speaking, they mean somewhat different, but to the everyday consumer and especially to what we hear in the media, it's all the same, right? But these are the servers that are sort of hidden and not accessible over the Internet. You have to go using an anonymizing proxy, such as Tor, to be able to access these sites, and then sort of be in the know to know how to get to these sites. Otherwise, you wouldn't know what the URL is. It's not a .com.
So, right.
You'd have to be kind of in the know and do some research to get to that part of the web.
But that's where you can buy all sorts of things, whether they be illegal drugs or even instructions on how to put out a hacking program, maybe not as advanced as this WannaCry ransomware attack, but you can get instructions on how
definitely.
To...
No, even as advanced
oh, even
as this
that.
WannaCry
wow.
attack. I mean, that
oh,
is, in fact, where a lot of the trading, if you will, for the sort of code necessary to execute those type of attacks happen.
Wow. My eyes sort of, you've rolled
sort
back
of,
in my
sort
head.
Of the irony of this one is that it came as a result of an exploit, as we call it, an exploit that was actually developed by the NSA.
So the NSA developed this in order to ostensibly safeguard against this kind of stuff, and somebody got a hold of it and put it out there, and now it's wreaking havoc
on the
world?
No, the NSA got it for the same reason these guys did, to hack
really?
Into people without their permission.
Those bastards.
And, yes, and that was and that those vulnerabilities, along with the ones from the CIA, for example, that on WikiLeaks recently, those were put out there. And
wow.
once they became public, and like I said, the thing is, once they became public, they're no longer what we call a zero-day exploit. So what ended up happening is, of course, once Microsoft knew about it, they created a patch for it. But this just goes to show just how, to some degree, unprepared most of the world is when it comes to still patching. I mean, you got to realize that, hacking in general kind of started with basically taking advantage of something that was already broken.
Hmm.
And the system's already broken.
Wow.
So nobody had fixed it. All these people that were affected had not put the fix in yet, even though the fix existed. So it's sort of like, being surprised that your car broke down and it's been making a noise.
Sure. Now, I understand why, you got to get in the mind of an unethical person, someone who would go out and do this kind of ransomware hacking because they're going to get paid back something in the end. But maybe you can help me with this because I don't understand why people write viruses just to fuck with people. Is that the cause? I mean, why would someone put out a virus that they're not going to get anything out of?
Here's an interesting fact. Unfortunately, the, let's call it consumer world, the non-technical folk, which is the rest of us, that's let's be honest,
that's me.
My mom,
right?
For example,
and me.
Still would use the term virus. But the truth is, viruses are not written anymore. There is no viruses because that was a long time ago. That was back in the days when it was, for the most part, viruses were written to destroy data, to fuck with people, as you put it. The truth is that's not the case anymore. Data is king. It's not content is king. Data is king. And data is valuable. And that's what people are after, is data. So there is no destruction of data. On the contrary, malware is the best example of, and you know, of what the new target and or motive is, which is entirely financial. Right. In the days of viruses, it could be, in fact, many viruses were written because, you know, hey, I broke up with my girlfriend and I don't like her, you know, so I'm going to write a virus against her, and then that gets out and hits many other people. But the truth is that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, you know,
now we're dealing with software that calls home and asks for instructions. That's not a virus.
Huh.
And it really isn't. In fact, you know, unfortunately, most people believe that by having an antivirus on their computers, it would stop things like this. It would not.
So what is the best way to protect ourselves? Should we, if we're not online, should we log off and turn off the computer and disconnect it?
Well, the most protected way that you can be is certainly disconnected. Not connected at all. But, it's a matter of, you know, convenience has a price.
Right.
We pay extra at 7-Eleven. Than we would at the supermarket.
Sure.
Because it's more convenient. So mm-hmm. Technology is a convenience that we really cannot live without anymore. So the truth is that at this moment in time, and there really isn't too many solutions for consumers. There's tons of solutions for corporations. And that being said, look at what just happened.
Yeah.
So the bigger problem is number one, there's a massive, the number of devices and use of technology is growing way well beyond our expectations. And number two, there's a massive scarcity of knowledgeable people in my field across the world. I think Forbes recently, I think last year, wrote an article about this and said that there was 1 million unfilled cybersecurity jobs right now.
Wow.
1 million. So there is that's the big problem, is there's not enough people to really address the problem at a large scale, and hence the problem with the consumer issue, which is really what I've been working on, and you'll hear more about it towards the end of the year. But that's been my passion, is to try to address this issue of how do I protect my mom.
Oh, cool. So
and how do I protect everybody other?
So you specifically
exactly.
are working on a solution for people like me and your mom?
I am, exactly, because it's such a complex issue that it has to be made really simple. And it really has a lot to do with awareness and how to make you aware without making you a tech geek, right? Because
right.
Most people, you start saying, you know, you start talking all of this language we use, and most people just, their eyes glaze over and they don't really want to listen. So it has to be made really, really simple for people to understand, and it has to work.
Yes. So for now, the best thing is just be diligent. I got to tell you, I got this computer built for me to run this radio show. Had a custom built, had very little, you know, of the add-ons, the bloatware, as they call it, put on. And I screwed up because I was in a hurry, and I was downloading some software, and I didn't pay attention. And all of a sudden, Windows started popping up and flying, and it took over my computer, and my stomach dropped. I thought, oh, my God, it's telling me to call this number. And I thought, all right, this is an attack. It's telling me to call this number. These are the people who've done this to me. I shut everything down. I unplugged it from the internet. And I called Microsoft and paid, I don't know, $150. And for the next couple of weeks, they were in my computer messing with it, removing bits and pieces. And to this day, that was like 2 years ago, it's still not right.
Well, the truth is, generally speaking, Microsoft would never call you.
Right.
Would never contact. One thing you did there by contacting them
mm-hmm.
is a good thing. And that you got that number from what is a verified number.
Yes.
But the truth is generally speaking, That's the problem, is that people are unaware of how things actually work. And when you see one of these emails and it looks legit, and you end up at a website and it looks legit, then you tend to assume that it's legit, but it's not.
Yeah, and if your computer is attacked by something and you have all these windows popping up and it says, call this number and we'll fix it for you, you need to be smart enough to know, no, they're the ones attacking you. That's not the number you call. So
yeah, that's what we call social engineering. Engineering is manipulating people into giving you information that obviously would increase your risk in operating anything. And it's very, very, it's running rampant, if you will, right now. It's not like this malware issue. It's slightly different. It's more like the phishing attack that you got from the bank, and you need to go to this website. But it also happens because many websites are already hacked, And what they do is they put code in the website to pop up windows, like you said, that say you've been infected. And, you know, a lot of porn sites and places like that are known to do this, which is referred to as dark marketing.
Ooh.
And then, you know, you believe this stuff, you know, like I said, my mom would. And she would follow those instructions. In reality, you're giving them access. It's not, it's an attempt at an attack, but you haven't been hacked yet. The problem is most people give them everything they want, and then they gain access to your computer.
Right, but the bottom line is,
it's the same thing.
There was still something put in my computer that no matter, I sent it back in, they tore it apart, they rebuilt it, and it's still not right. But I didn't give them access to come in and do whatever else they wanted to do, where they could have gotten a hold of all my financial information and everything else.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. They were getting a hold of everything on your computer, which is, for most people, their entire life.
Yeah, that's it. So, well, people need to be diligent.
And their phones, you know?
Oh, God.
That's, yep. You know, we're moving more and more towards a mobile world. I think we are pretty much now. I mean, the numbers of mobile continue to increase while the numbers of you know, laptop computers and desktops are decreasing. So,
sure. And they are calling. They are calling cell phones and saying that they're Microsoft and they're calling to fix a problem in your computer or something. If you ever get a call like that, you just hang up. They're not going to call you.
Absolutely not. Right. And then, you know, you would be able to find, generally speaking, that the public number for a company, they would never call you.
Right. All right. Ralph Ekamendia, thank you so much. It's great talking to you. Maybe when you're back in Miami, we can do it in person one time and maybe take some calls.
I would love to.
All right. We'll do that. I'm Nicole Sandler here at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network and the other wonderful stations that carry the show. I just that was pre-recorded. I spoke with Ralph just an hour or so before the program because he's over in Latvia where it's late at night. So we taped it so we wouldn't be talking in the middle of the night there. And of course, that interview went for 20 minutes. While that was happening, there was more breaking news. I'm not kidding. This has happened every day for the last 2 weeks, but this is a biggie. Let me share with you from the Washington Post news alert. The headline reads, "A White House official close to President Trump is now a person of interest in Russia probe, people familiar with the case say." And here's the brief synopsis of the story. The law enforcement investigation into possible coordination between Russia and the Trump campaign has identified a current White House advisor as a significant person of interest, showing that the probe is reaching into the highest levels of government, according to people familiar with the matter. A senior White House advisor close to President Trump is under scrutiny by investigators who are looking into the possible coordination between Russia and the Trump campaign. This is heavy duty. My guess would be Jared Kushner. Mm-hmm. There was another one. Let me see. Yep. Oh, it's the same story. This is what's going all over the internet. Heavy duty stuff. To be continued. Stay tuned. All right, now we'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side with Wendell Potter next.
I read the news today. Oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Answering questions for the first time since a special counsel was appointed to take over the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 elections, Donald Trump said it was harmful for the country.
Well, I respect the move, but the entire thing has been a witch hunt, and there is no collusion between certainly myself and my campaign, but I can always speak for myself and the Russians, zero. I think it divides the country. So I can tell you that we want to bring this great country of ours together. I'm fine with whatever people want to do, but we have to get back to running this country really, really well. Believe me, there's no collusion.
Trump took two questions at a joint presser with Colombian President Santos, reiterating his vow to stamp out the drug trade and build a wall on the border with Mexico.
Walls work. Just ask Israel. They work. Believe me, they work. and we have no choice.
That pronouncement came in response to a question about coca grown in Colombia, which Trump kept calling cocoa, and the cocaine that finds its way to the U.S. Trump then called on
Peter Baker,
who writes for the New York Times. But NBC News' Peter Alexander tweeted, Trump pointed at me, called on at Peter Baker NYT, and at Scott Thurman got the mic. Whoever it was asked the question that got the most pointed response of the day.
Did you at any time urge former FBI Director James Comey in any way, shape, or form to close or to back down the investigation into Michael Flynn? And also, as you look back...
No. Next question.
All righty, then.
As you look back over the past 6 months or year, have you had any recollection where you've wondered if anything you have done has been something that might be worthy of criminal charges in these investigations or impeachment, as some on the left are implying?
I think it's totally ridiculous. Everybody thinks so.
Not everybody.
And again, we have to get back to working our country properly so that we can take care of the problems that we have. Director Comey was very unpopular with most people.
Not according to acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe and the FBI rank and file.
I actually thought when I made that decision, and I also got a very, very strong recommendation, as you know, from the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein. But when I made that decision, I actually thought that it would be a bipartisan decision, because you look at all of the people on the Democratic side, not only the Republican side, that was saying such terrible things about Director Comey. Then he had the very poor performance on Wednesday. That was a poor, poor performance. So poor, in fact, that I believe, and you'd have to ask him, because I don't like to speak for other people, but I believe that's why the Deputy Attorney General went out and wrote his very, very strong letter.
Wrong.
Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein spoke to all 100 U.S. senators on Thursday, telling them that he knew that the president planned to fire James Comey as director of the FBI before he wrote a memo outlining the reasons for his dismissal. That according to three Democratic lawmakers who were in the briefing, contradicting the story the White House told about the impetus for the firing and which Trump seemed to return to in this presser. Although he didn't name his pick to replace Comey as FBI director, he did heap praise on the agency he had previously lumped in with the rest of the intelligence community when he compared them to Nazis.
I cherish the FBI. It's special. All over the world, no matter where you go, the FBI is special. The FBI has not had that special reputation with what happened in the campaign, what happened with respect to the Clinton campaign, and even, you could say, directly or indirectly, with respect to the much more successful Trump campaign.
Trump leaves Friday for his first trip as president, as Seth Meyers explains.
On Friday, he sets out for his first foreign trip to Europe and the Middle East, and aides were hoping it would represent a chance to reboot his presidency. Instead, with all the turmoil going on, Trump seems less than excited about the trip. According to the Times, Trump, a confirmed homebody, has expressed dread about the trip, asking aides whether it can be shortened to 5 days from 9.
No joke there. That's true.
During this trip, Trump will meet with leaders of NATO, our most important military alliance. And according to a recent report, NATO is scrambling to tailor its upcoming meeting to avoid taxing President Donald Trump's notoriously short attention span. The alliance is telling heads of state to limit talks to 2 to 4 minutes.
Again, no joke necessary. That's true, too. On his show Thursday night, Seth Meyers did dig up some old audio of then-candidate Trump, proving to be quite prescient, but pointing at the wrong person.
The FBI now has multiple open criminal investigations into Hillary Clinton. And now she's going to run the country. She'll be under investigation for years. She'll be with trials. I mean, we went through it with him with the impeachment and the lies. Aren't we tired of this stuff? This election will determine whether we remain a free country in the truest sense of the word, or we become a corrupt banana republic controlled by large donors and foreign governments. This is collusion and corruption of the highest order, and is one more reason why I ask my attorney general, I will ask, to appoint a special prosecutor.
It's almost like Donald Trump is a time traveler sent to warn us about himself.
Oh, God, I'm too late.
If you appreciate our What's News reports, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. What's News and The Nicole Sandler Show are 100% listener-supported. We depend on you to be able to keep doing this work. For more information and to help us out, please visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. And a quick note along those lines, thanks to a very generous listener, we have a matching donation in effect in May. I don't talk about it enough because I'm horrible at asking for money, but a listener in Illinois is matching all donations up to $500 in the month of May. So if you give, your donation is doubled. Okay, before we get Wendell Potter on the line, and I'm already late, there is more breaking news. I told you there was another story. I just had a little brain fart here. From the New York Times, the headline, this I can't make this up. Headline reads, Trump told Russians that firing, quote, nut job Comey eased pressure from investigation. And it reads a little bit of the article. President Trump told Russian officials in the Oval Office this month that firing FBI Director James Comey had relieved, quote, great pressure on him, according to a document summarizing the meeting. Quote, I just fired the head of the FBI. He was crazy, a real nut job, Mr. Trump said, according to the document, which was read to the New York Times by an American official. Quote, I face great pressure because of Russia. That's taken off. Mr. Trump added, I'm not under investigation. That conversation was during a May 10th meeting, the day after he fired Mr. Comey, reinforces the notion that Mr. Trump dismissed him primarily because of the Bureau's investigation into possible collusion between his campaign and Russian operatives. Mr. Trump said as much in one televised interview, but the White House has offered changing justifications for the firing. Again, two big breaking news stories, one from the New York Times, one from the Washington Post, just since we've been on the air today. Oh my goodness. And there's breaking news and the health front battle. So it's perfect timing that today I get to welcome Wendell Potter back to the program. Listeners, longtime listeners of the show will remember Wendell Potter. He was a health insurance industry whistleblower. He left his job, I believe it was at Cigna, because he just couldn't do it anymore. Wendell Potter, are you there?
I am. How are you, Nicole?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Terrific. Thanks.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Wendell Potter is now a senior analyst at the Center for Public Integrity, a senior fellow on healthcare at the Center for Media and Democracy, one of my favorite organizations, and of course, a leading critic of the health insurance industry. He's the author of a couple of books, including The Brilliant Deadly Spin, which recounted the whole fight for the Affordable Care Act, which we basically went through together all those years ago. And
right.
Wendell, I don't know if you saw this, but just another story since I went on the air. Politico is reporting just within the last 20 minutes or so, Trump said to favor move that could destabilize Obamacare. And what the article goes on to say is that he has told advisors he wants to end payments of key Obamacare subsidies, a move that could send the health laws insurance markets into a tailspin. So he's now floating the idea of just not honoring the subsidies that the government is supposed to pay according to the Affordable Care Act.
It doesn't surprise me. I've worried that that might be what he would do because he clearly has no interest in making sure that people who have coverage can afford to use it. And that's what those subsidies are for. They're to help people cover their out-of-pocket expenses. A lot of insurers will look at this as just the latest attempt, this time proactively, apparently, to destabilize the marketplace. It just doesn't make a lot of sense when you really think about it, because people are going to be losing their coverage and we'll see more insurers pulling out. You can only go so far to point to the Obama administration as the problem here, because that definitely would be something caused by this administration.
Yeah, you know, and I'm one of those people. My insurance is through the Affordable Care Act, and without the subsidy, I certainly wouldn't be able to afford it. So I'm one of the first people who's going to lose it. And of course, I don't know if you remember, I think we've spoken since last summer. Last summer, I was diagnosed with lung cancer. So
right.
I am now 8 months cancer-free, knocking on wood laminate here. I have quarterly scans, and without insurance, that all goes away.
So it's just unconscionable. They just apparently do not think of people as human beings. I've seen that, though. I saw it in the insurance industry. when you are seeing something only from a political lens or a financial lens, you're able to forget that you're really talking about real life human beings.
Right. And, you know, and so we keep hearing, you know, conflicting stories about what's happening with what I will call Trump Care, the American Health Care Act, which, you know what, if they call the Affordable Care Act Obamacare, I'll call this Trump Care. It's easier to remember than AHCA. But so what happened with that, Wendell, is the House passed whatever it passed, which was just a horrific piece of legislation, sent it to the Senate, and the Senate said, basically the same thing. This is terrible. We're going to start from scratch and do our own thing. But now I'm hearing something different. Are you hearing something? Are they going to send this back to the House?
It could be that something goes back. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think anyone really has a good read on what's happening in Washington. The Senate could come up with some kind of a bill that would be quite different from what the House passed. I don't think that the Senate will pass the House version. There'd be too much opposition from the moderates, even the Republican Party. It's just anyone's guess. I don't know. I think we're certainly not out of the woods in terms of damage that can be caused to people's lives with some kind of legislation. I can't imagine that anything that would pass that would actually improve access to care and lower cost, despite what they say.
Right. Now, the other problem, though, is if Trump somehow says we're going to stop paying the subsidies, which he can legally do, if I recall correctly, is a provision that Marco Rubio somehow injected into the Affordable Care Act that allows them to stop paying the subsidies. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do, and it is a prerogative, apparently, of the whatever administration's in power not to continue paying the subsidies. Now, that doesn't mean that your tax credits would go away. There are two different buckets of support. One is the tax credits that you get from that help you afford your premiums, and the other is what we're talking about to help you the subsidies that help you meet your out-of-pocket expenses. And both are important, but apparently what the president has the ability to do is stop payments on the subsidies. And they are available, from my understanding, for people who are enrolled in silver-level plans.
Right.
So the folks there would be affected. Now, you could enroll in a gold plan, your premiums would be a bit higher, but you would have lower out-of-pocket expenses. Huh. So it wouldn't necessarily be a devastating blow because there would be other options. But if you enroll in a gold plan, you probably would get more help as in tax credits to enroll in that plan.
I
so
see.
It may not be as bad as it could be. That's what I understand could be the case.
Either way, it's going to make life much more difficult and probably more precarious for millions of us. Goodness. Wendell Potter is with us. You know, Wendell, you heard as I got you on the line, I was talking about two breaking stories. And actually, if we include this one from Politico about destabilizing Obamacare, three breaking stories in the 40 minutes since I've been on the air. This is the dilemma that so many of us who do what I do for a living have run into. I have a really difficult time keeping all the breaking news straight and all the insanity that's happening in Washington. That's why I find the little bit I've read so far about Tarbell exciting. Now, you're here not so much to talk about healthcare, although you're obviously happy to do so, but you're starting a new venture called Tarbell, which is a new journalistic enterprise. Can you tell us what this is about?
What we're doing is launching a new nonprofit news organization, very independent, called Tarbell, and it's named after Ida Tarbell, who was a early 20th century muckraking journalist, and she was one of the most important journalists in American history. Her reporting led to the breakup of John D. Rockefeller's huge conglomerate that was called Standard Oil Company.
Oh, sure.
And her reporting led to some very important antitrust and campaign finance legislation. So she's our guiding spirit, and that's why we named what we're doing after her. It's going to be a blend of investigative reporting and solutions reporting. In other words, we're going to be investigating our problems, particularly in healthcare, with a focus on who is financing the corruption, who is writing the checks to protect a very profitable status quo, whether they're the insurance companies or hospital groups or what have you, and drug companies, and helping people understand how that affects us every day in our lives, to connect the dots so people can see the consequences of all the money that is being spent by these moneyed special interests to protect a very profitable status quo, and explain why it is often so hard to move forward with any kind of progressive change. The other half of what we're going to be doing, though, will have an equal focus on pointing to solutions. How can we move forward? What are some of the things that can be done if we have the political will and if people get engaged and support them to make improvements? Our mission is to create a more just and fair society through journalism. So it's not journalism just to keep people informed. That's important, and we'll do that. But it's also to engage people, to encourage people to get involved and know that they can be empowered, and will actually help people understand how they can take those steps to become more engaged and to become part of the solution. We're going to launch this summer a crowdfunding campaign. We want to be entirely reader-funded eventually. We are in startup phase right now. We're raising money from individuals and foundations. We've raised well over $100,000.
Nice.
We've got a bit more we want to raise, but we're going to be really, I'm confident, a very important news media organization doing important reporting in both investigations and solutions by midsummer.
Who else is involved in this with you?
If you look at tarbell.org, that's our website, mm-hmm. you'll see a list of our board members and our board of directors and board of advisors. We have people who are some of the biggest names in healthcare in journalism who are advising us. People who founded news organizations like Chuck Lewis, who is at American University in Washington, who founded the Center for Public Integrity 30 years ago.
Wow.
We've got Ethan Zuckerman from the MIT Media Lab is on my board of advisors. It's a very diverse board of men and women, a lot of people of color, and people who come from different backgrounds to help us guide this and launch it. And we'll have a core editorial team of about 15 people. We'll be working with journalists around the country, though contracting with journalists on a freelance basis. We want to make sure we're getting news and information from around the country. It's not going to be just something that is done for inside the Beltway in Washington. In fact, we're not even based in D.C. So we're going to be looking to make sure our content is distributed throughout the country. We want our website to be a destination. And I couldn't be more excited, Nicole. I've done a number of things in my career, written books and done a lot of media interviews and testified before Congress a number of times. This is the most important thing, in my view, that I've ever done.
Wow. So I'm reading from the website. It says, power is tied to money. Politicians in America enact policies shaped by this power. That is so true. You know, I was just reading again about the Koch brothers. And the Koch brothers are looking not only to influence local elections. I mean, they've really, or national, state and national elections, but they're getting into very local races, even in some places as local as school board races. It's all about the money.
Yep.
And obviously there's been, our side has had a big push to get money out of politics. We haven't been that successful in it. You're looking to show, to follow the money.
Exactly. It's to follow the money and at all levels, local and state and federal. And you're exactly right. A lot of money is being spent to influence races at the state and local levels. Some of the big spenders who spend enormous sums of money, dark money in many cases, to influence elections at the state and local levels, including in some cases, in especially judicial races where judges run for public office.
Yeah,
and not appointed.
You know, and look, it's not unique to the right. In fact, I spoke with Will Bunch the other day, who writes for the Philadelphia Daily News, and the progressive side of the equation had a big win in Philadelphia on Tuesday.
Yep, that's true.
With the new DA, and I applaud
exactly.
that. But one thing that's kind of disturbing is a lot of money was put into that race by the boogeyman himself, George Soros. And I'm always joking. It's like, I haven't gotten my check from George Soros yet. Have you gotten yours? I mean, it's always been a running joke among those of us who do media on the left, because we are grossly underfunded by the moneyed interests on the left. It's truly sad in that, you know, you look at who funds right-wing media, and there seems to be no shortage of dollars on that side. On our side, it's not
yeah.
quite so easy. I'm just as upset about George Soros putting in so much money. I mean, I'm glad for the outcome, but that it doesn't make it right that George Soros came out of where I think he lives in California and put all this money into the DA's race in Philadelphia.
I agree with you. And it just points that we've got such a broken system. On the one hand, you can look at it, well, if George Soros is not there, if he's not able to provide money in races, knowing that those on the right are going to be attempting to influence races as well too, you got to stay in the game, or you got to play by the existing rules. So that's really, I guess, the dynamic that's going on. It doesn't make it right, and it just points to why this is and it should be a nonpartisan issue. And it is happening around the country. People on both sides of the political aisle are coming to understand that the system is just broken because of all the money that is now being spent to influence public policy and elections, and we've got to do something about it. In my latest book, Nation on the Take, I wrote about people in Tallahassee, Florida, on both sides of the political aisle, coming together because of disgust about corruption in local government there, and they were able to work together and push through local legislation to clean up the corruption. So it can
wow.
be done, and it just it shows you that this is something that is a bipartisan issue.
Oh, it most definitely is. Wendell Potter is our guest. He's launching a new website, tarbell.org, is where you can go read about the organization and what they hope to do. I'm very encouraged that you've raised so much money already, because as I mentioned earlier, we do have an issue. Look, for years, I railed against the mainstream corporate media because, well, for a number of reasons that I don't need to enumerate
yeah.
here. Although I got to
yeah.
say, in the last however many weeks since Donald Trump has been in office, journalists have really re-earned their stripes, I think. You know, just looking at specifically pointing to the New York Times and the Washington Post, I think they've gone above and beyond and shown how important it is to have an independent, free press. But it's really sad. The Reporters Without Borders put out their new World Index, and the United States is at number 43. Not something to brag about. But again, you know, we saw a few years ago when Rush Limbaugh ran into so much trouble, warranted, by the way, and lost a ton of advertisers, a lot of right-wing groups came to the rescue. They started putting issue advertising on his show. They may have lost their corporate sponsors, but the money didn't go away. What happened is it hurt liberal talk radio, progressive talk radio, because the corporate sponsors said, we don't want any political programming at all. They didn't differentiate between left and right. They just said, we don't want controversial programming. We don't want political programming. And so it hurt progressive talk radio more than it hurt conservative talk radio, because the sponsors pulled out. They still had corporate, they had, issue money coming in. On the left, we don't see that. Shows like mine are struggling. No. In fact, we're on the Progressive Voices Network, and I know most of the programs on the network are struggling because we don't have the big money interests on the left supporting the media. Are you're seeing something different with Tarbell so far?
Well, we have been blessed, and I have certainly worked, my network of friends and folks that I've known and become acquainted with in recent years, but it's taken a lot of effort. I've traveled the country essentially begging for money to fund this, and it takes that. You know, it's not easy. There also is not as much of an appreciation of the importance of journalism as there should be. We're seeing that change with the craziness of the Trump administration, but people largely haven't been accustomed to giving to journalism, and we do now have a growing number of nonprofit journalism outlets that are so very important, and they're really picking up the slack in many ways because of the decline of newsrooms. A lot of newspapers have shut down. A lot of TV and radio stations have shut down or shrunk their news staffs. So we really have seen the disappearance of a lot of journalism jobs. New ones there are some new journalism jobs in the nonprofit world. So we've got to convince those who are philanthropists to pay attention to what we're trying to do and to fund us.
Without a doubt. Wendell Potter, I hope you don't mind if I return to healthcare for just a moment, because I have a question from the chat room where somebody asked about California's SB 562, Medicare for All, that looks like this may be happening in California. Do you have any info on that for us?
Well, it is very encouraging. It's the first time in some recent years that there has been legislation to create a single-payer healthcare system, a Medicare for All type of system in California. Legislators in California have passed that similar legislation twice in the past. They happened to be during the administration of Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he vetoed them both times. But this time, they're getting traction again. It has a lot of support. I'm in touch with people who are in California who are very excited about this. May not pass this year, but they feel they've got momentum. And there's a lot of concern, quite frankly, about what is happening in Washington, and that the gains that have been made because of the Affordable Care Act can be taken away. So there's a lot of interest in not only in preserving the gains, but to go much further. And so I'm encouraged.
Good. Well, when we saw they attempted to do it in Vermont a few years ago, but do you recall what happened with that, why it failed?
I do. It was in the execution, and I think it was a good effort. The legislature did pass it. The governor was supportive. Vermont is a very small state. It turned out to be financially difficult for the state to pull it off. And one of the things the state didn't do, and I think California and other states that attempt this in the future need to understand, they've got to persuade people to understand or explain this to people so that they can see that the premiums that they're currently paying now to insurance companies, think of that as a tax. And here's why I say that, because there's no way to get to a single-payer system without imposing a tax to pay for it. It's publicly financed health care. Your premiums that you pay for private health insurance would go away.
Right, but you'd pay more in taxes.
And people don't really appreciate that. They can't see that or make that calculation in their head. So you've really got to condition the public to really understand how they will benefit. And that's not necessarily an easy thing to do. It requires a really good and sophisticated communications campaign. And also, as I said, Vermont's fairly small, and there are just really two very large hospital systems in Vermont, and one of them is not actually in Vermont. It's Dartmouth across the state line in New Hampshire.
Right.
So you had some complicating factors there.
Right. And it was the governor, I guess, who finally said, you know what, we can't get this going. There were a lot of factors at play. But California could be the reality. Yeah. And you know what they say, as goes California, so goes the nation.
Exactly. California is a huge market. It could be, you know, it's bigger than most countries, many countries, and has a very, you know, it's a very big market. So I think they would not face the same problems Vermont did. It's not going to be easy. It's not an easy lift. You're talking about really significant change, but it certainly can be. And the other thing, Nicole, is that the current system is just simply not sustainable. If it's not going to happen this year, it's going to happen sometime down the road that we're going to be seeing something like single payer, because you just can't keep going with a system like we have now.
No, and if Trump keeps, you know, look, it, as recently as yesterday with his, you know, two-question press conference, he keeps asserting Obamacare is dead. It's dead. Well, it's not dead yet. It saved my life. It's still saving my life. I go in for my next quarterly scan in about 2.5 weeks. So, you know, if he kills it, it'll be dead. But, you know, that's why we need to keep speaking out. And people calling their senators and their congressmen really does help. And, you know, if the Senate, the longer the Senate takes to do anything, the better chance we have of salvaging something.
You're so right. And what you are suggesting is exactly what Tarbell is going to be about. It's helping people to understand the importance of picking up the phone or sending a text or email or a handwritten letter to a member of Congress or a state legislator or the White House, for that matter. People need to know how to do that, the importance of doing that. It's one way of becoming part of the solution.
Definitely. Wendell Potter, it's so good to talk with you. We went through it was almost 2 years, it seems, that the whole writing and putting together of the Affordable Care Act. That's why when I hear Trump and the other Republicans talking about they wrote it and passed it in the dead of night, I'm wondering what world were they living in? This thing went on forever, and it was written in three committees and then brought together, and there were hearings and testimony. And so for them trying to push through this Trump care like that does everyone a disservice. Tarbell.org is where people can find out more about Tarbell, the new news service that Wendell Potter will be launching. I'm really excited about this. Please keep in touch and let us know how it's going.
Absolutely, Nicole. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Wendell Potter, he is really one of the good guys. And I'll tell you something. If you weren't paying close attention during the fight over the Affordable Care Act, get Deadly Spin. I'm telling you, I read it in a weekend. Then again, I lived through it. Just to refresh you on how that fight went, it was a long, drawn-out process. All right. Lots of breaking news. I'm going to go. I know it's Friday. I should go unwind and, you know, unplug. But I'm going to go watch the news because we had three big breaking news stories since the show started. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Have a great weekend. Monday is the Monday Music Show. And Tuesday, we'll be back with Gotta Laugh. All right. I will leave you with, you know what? Make noise. Get out and rant and rave. I'll leave you with Joe Jackson. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great weekend.
just a bug that they trample. You see what has happened, of course. 'Cause instead of using the force of example, now it's just the example of force.